This is David Harlow with Health Blog, and I'm speaking today with Nate Gross, co-founder of Doximity. Hi, Nate. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, David. Thanks so much for having me.
A pleasure. So I am speaking with Nate from his offices on the left coast, and he will be in Boston soon for the Connected Insight Summit on network analytics, and I am hoping to hear something interesting about what's happening with the network at Doximity. But before we get into some details, Nate, could you give a thumbnail sketch of Doximity and where your network stands today?
Yeah, absolutely. So often in the media, Doximity gets described as a LinkedIn for doctors. And the assessment, you know, while limited, is actually a good foundation on how to describe it. We're a professional network that connects medical professionals through a secure platform. And the goal of the platform is to help these doctors deliver faster, more efficient, and also smarter treatment. A key difference between Doximity and a other social network, in addition to the security features, is that Doximity has built much of this network in advance. And so in a way, we're actually a directory of every physician in the United States. And we have sizable CVs on each of these physicians, which means that unlike many smaller networks where you're just hoping to find a doctor, and if you do, you may, you know, find the most tech-savvy one, but maybe not the perfect one for your patient. We want physicians to be able to find anyone that they would look up outside of the online space just in a more efficient way using online tools. So a physician, for instance, would use Doximity to find, say, the right medical expert for their patient. Maybe they need a orthopedic knee surgeon who speaks French and lives within 30 miles of Sacramento and takes Aetna health insurance and trained at a top 10 hospital. And we can identify that provider immediately, and then the physicians can get in touch just like they always would. Or perhaps, you know, they're trying
and
to be more...
And if the specialist is not already a member of Doximity, then your directory function allows someone to reach out through another communications platform?
Yeah, absolutely. We have secure messaging, and that's an important feature of the site because for the physicians that use it, it does save them a lot of time. We also try to have as many convenient direct lines to the doctors as possible. You know, if they want to use the regular cell phone or, you know, the landline in their hospital, or if they want to send a fax, we help them send a fax faster. For us, the goal is efficiency of their existing conversation modalities, and we expect over time they'll transition to the more convenient digital features that we offer, but by no means are we forcing those upon the doctors. We just want to speed up what they're already doing.
Sure. And you alluded to the fact that information, not just messaging, can be shared through this platform. Is that right? So we're talking test results, imaging, things like that?
Yeah, you know, we don't obviously know the content of the messages that physicians are sharing with one another because everything is very much encrypted end-to-end and in transmission. And we do enable them to share high-resolution images, PDFs, lab reports, and many times that's physician to physician. In some cases, it's physician to group of physicians, say, among a clinic or a hospital department, or perhaps between a hospitalist and a group of consulting cardiologists, for instance, often within an existing institutional structure, or sometimes exploring new sources of expertise. And, you know, there may be a physician in Montana, or actually our first early adopter state was actually Alaska. And there, the physicians are just so far apart that they don't get that daily water cooler discussion that physicians, say, at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston would get, where they could just float a tough case that they're having past a group of diverse experts. But thanks to our network, they can track those folks down, see who they know in common, see if they should trust that answer, and listen to the advice.
And are there typically multiple connections within this network? Does a single physician have a couple dozen connections, more? If you go on LinkedIn, people's profiles say they have 500 or 1,000 connections. Is that the kind of level of connectivity that you're looking for?
You know, it is. We obviously don't want to dilute the experience, but we also want to help physicians find whoever they need to find. And so there's a variance, and I'll go into some of that at the Connected Insight Summit in Cambridge when I talk. But in total, we have around 10 million connections between physicians across the entire network. And this is with a membership base of 200,000 doctors. So that's about just under 30% of U.S. doctors have actively signed up for Doximity and are building out their social graph. Now, certain specialties may have a broader connection base, and sometimes those connections are for different reasons. For instance, if you're a specialist, maybe a plastic surgeon or an orthopedic surgeon building out your practice, you may find that many of your connections are going out to family practice physicians or sports medicine physicians, trying to make yourself available for more potential referrals. If you're a hospitalist, your connections may be within the hospital that you're working at among the specialists so that you can quickly coordinate care, as well as to a lot of primary care physicians that your patients are coming in from. So it differs, but just as an example, the 200,000th physician to join Doximity, which was a couple months back, he was an oncologist. He had been invited to join Doximity from a local surgeon. And, you know, there was a couple-day process where his identity was verified and he completed his online CV. But over that period, he built out a network graph of about 40 other colleagues. And that included, you know, surgeons at the same hospital, as well as reaching farther back. You know, a lot of doctors have found it useful to connect with people that they went to residency with, for instance, that they've lost touch with. Because remember, for most physicians, it's a pre-Facebook generation. But the fact that we already know who their residency classmates and medical school classmates are, we can enable those connections more easily. And sometimes that can be great just for getting back in touch or saying, oh, I dated that person and now they're in Colorado. And other times you didn't know that, oh, it turns out that one of my residency classmates lives 40 miles away from me and I actually am looking to expand my practice there and this is a perfect opportunity to reconnect.
What sort of feedback do you get from users about how they're using the platform?
You know, that's one of our challenges because we get a lot of feedback and a lot of ideas. There's not just one type of doctor. Of course, you have academic versus private practice, old versus young, specialist versus primary care, rural versus urban. And so there's a lot of different axes to the graph of products that we design. But for the most part, we see a lot of demand around improving efficiency to communication, specifically when it involves coordination of care. So one of the first features that we started building was a secure messaging feature, for instance. And it's great. It's kind of like your cell phone on steroids, HIPAA-compliant secure texting. And there's obviously been a lot of development in the U.S. and in this area over the past year. But one of the hurdles that we were running into is in the feedback we were getting back from doctors, they were saying, well, yeah, this is great, but I just don't know if the doctor that I need to contact is also going to be using this service right now. And so I'm too hesitant to do it. And so while you might see pockets of this communication occurring within, say, a hospital where everyone adopts it at once after a champion sort of endorses it, it wasn't really being used for broad clinical care until we could get a little more critical mass. And so what we did was based on physician feedback, we did something a little embarrassing because we always had sayings around the office that we were going to kill the pager and we were going to kill the fax machine. But instead we decided to embrace it and go backwards compatible. And we now give every physician that wants it their own 1-800 fax number and they can send and receive faxes from their phone, which sure is a little more roundabout compared to like a secure messaging platform, but you know you can send and receive faxes with anyone in the country, no matter how much of a technophobe they are. And so it allows the folks who do want to embrace technology to do so and conveniently zoom in on those faxes and read them and sign them with their finger on their iPad, but not feel like they're forcing everyone at once to jump onto a new platform. And you can trust that you're still using the common currency of medical communication, which right now is the fax.
Great. Well, that's I think, an important step to have that backwards compatibility in order to be able to have folks continue their existing conversations. I am wondering if you could tell me about your revenue model. One comparison that springs to mind, though it's different, is Sermo, though you're using real names here. And part of the revenue model with Sermo, I understand, was essentially, one way or another, allowing non-professionals to enter the conversation, if you will. I wonder if you're doing something similar or something different.
That's a really great question. We are very cognizant to the sentiment of our physician members. And what we've learned through all of that is that physicians need a private community, especially when they use their real names, which, as you alluded to, Doximity is a name-identified professional network. And physicians are staking their reputations on what they say, and they're putting themselves out there for really the first time in digital history. Whereas before, they've been very hesitant to post on, say, the comments of a blog or on insecure social mediums like Twitter and Facebook without the maybe not guaranteed, but shield of anonymity. And so we respect that, and we make sure that, you know, the physicians are able to have this private community. There's no banner ads. There's no outside prying eyeballs. And instead, we've been able to develop a business model that's around the same sort of things that physicians are doing. We don't charge physicians for the service, but we've learned that physicians really do care about building out their careers in a protected digital environment, and they want to be able to find the exact person they need based on the information they're putting in their CVs. And so we allow the same opportunities for doctors who are looking to expand their careers. And I'll give you an example. When they sign up, doctors can say, oh, I'm interested in expertise consulting. And if they are, they can opt into a service where they can say, let's say they're the world's expert in hepatitis C, and somebody on Wall Street has a question about hepatitis C because maybe a new clinical trial or drug or something has come out. Historically, in other social mediums, the way they would get their answer is they would send out lots of surveys, or they would pry into what physicians were saying on other online arenas. But here, the physician can say that they're interested in consulting. We can broker an introduction, but we say, hey, we're only going to introduce you to this physician if you promise to pay the physician at least whatever they want, say $600 an hour. And now that doctor has a real reason, you know, being able to provide for their family, to have a short, brief conversation, and the other side is quite happy because they get their answer quickly. Another way this can be useful is around careers. That's the fastest growing part of our business right now. It's normally very hard for doctors to find the right fit for a job. And in the past, this hasn't been as much of an issue because physicians have really stayed in one spot for a long time. But as you're well aware, we're seeing a lot more absorption into larger hospital systems. We've seen, say, the flip of cardiologists from being two-thirds in private group practices to now two-thirds being hospital-affiliated, for instance. And for the first time, docs are realizing that, you know, due to either that change or new financial pressures or just a younger generation of doctors who are looking for something different out of their career, they want to find a slightly different environment. And in the past, that's been solved by things that are essentially Craigslist or by headhunters, and they're both incredibly inefficient systems. But if you have all the curriculum vitae of doctors in one spot, you're able to much more easily, when you need to find, say, a cardiothoracic surgeon to move to Montana, that's normally a tricky task. Montana's beautiful, except not that many doctors have a connection with it. But we're able to easily identify which doctors do have a connection with Montana, and those doctors can say if they're interested or not in looking for new job opportunities. But beyond that, you know, these offers typically say, oh, there's a new job opportunity within 30 minutes of Lakes, and that's all you learn about it. But because we're able to represent the physician side of the equation here, we're able to say, oh, no, you're only able to reach out if you put the salary right in the title of that email, so the doctor is able to know where it is, what it's worth, how much calls there. And from the physician side, they finally get to feel like for a change that they're able to specify their demands. They want to be a hospitalist and live in Seattle or Portland and make this much money with this much call. And they only get exact matches for that. So no more spam and no more inefficient market for either side. And so those kind of expertise introductions are what we're basing our economic model on right now, which allow us to provide this secure and physicians-only experience to our users for free.
So the job listing or the information seeking is done at a cost to the third party?
Exactly.
Okay, great. Do you have a sense of how many of the users opt in to use some of these tools versus just using the doctor-to-doctor communication platform?
Well, you know, again, it varies by types of physicians and where they are in their career and things like that. But I can tell you that we see absolutely incredible, I can't show the exact number, but just mind-blowing numbers of interest when there is an opportunity that could be a fit and physicians looking at that opportunity. And I think a lot of that is because we've gone to such lengths to protect the doctors. So, you know, again, the example that most job offers really give you no juicy details about the salary or things like that, and we insist on it. And because of that, you know, even if you're not looking for a job right now, doctors often want to know what they're worth. You know, it's good to know that you have a job offer for a couple $100,000 across the country, because maybe that'll help you over the next 6 months decide if that's even something that you're interested in. And so we're adding not only an additional layer of targeted introduction for both sides, but also a new layer of transparency that doctors haven't seen before. And so they're really almost all interested in it, just at least learning what they're worth. We get very little opt-out from the experience.
So do you have any new features that you might be rolling out in the future, or is this just sort of a slow organic growth that you're seeing in the product?
So, yeah, two new features that have picked up a lot of steam recently. One of them is called Doc News, and what it essentially is a way for physicians to connect around academic literature and medical knowledge, which has been very hard to do historically. If you think about it, you know, doctors read journals, yes, and the academically affiliated ones have unlimited journal access, although they don't have much time. And the private practice doctors have limited journal access, you know, in whatever happens to come in the mail. And then there's the annual conference that some of them go to, but it's really just people in their own specialty. And there's the water cooler discussion at work, and maybe there's some information that drug reps provide. But what we've done is we've managed to sync Doximity with the publishing output of every journal in the country through the help of the U.S. government and sources like PubMed. And now doctors can read what's going on in medical literature, and then more importantly, immediately react, read it critically, connect, post your opinions and anecdotes and thoughts on the literature, and have it read by other people at the same time. And because we know what doctors are interested in based on their profile, and they can also specify reading preferences, if you're that interventional cardiologist that likes percutaneous aortic valve replacement, you'll never miss an article on that subject, thanks to our system. And more importantly, you can see what other people are thinking about that same literature in real time. So we have conversations between study authors and readers the same day the article's published, which compared to, say, letters to the editor that get published once a month and then another month until there's a response and it's in the back page of the journal and nobody reads it, it's a lot more real time. And there's this number that's thrown around that says it takes 17 years for medical knowledge to disseminate in this country.
Just what I was going to ask you about.
Yeah.
The 17-year problem.
Exactly. And I'm not claiming we're going to completely solve it, but that's one of the things that, I mean, now we have conversations occurring in 17 minutes between a study author when something's published and readership, and they can go into more detail and share things with their colleagues, and it's absolutely amazing. Just hundreds of articles every day are being read, digested, and shared. And a new development there is we actually we're working with the Cleveland Clinic to add an additional perk to the feature, which is CME. Historically, continuing medical education is a very heavy, messy process where you have to fill out a large number of, you know, surveys and did this help your practice and how, and it's kind of the same redundant survey over and over and over and mail it in and hope you get the stamps back. And with our service, if you're using Doximity in an active way to look up topics that you're interested in and reading those articles, we know that you're reading those articles and we know who you are. And so we can speed up the process so that it's incredibly convenient, and at the end of the semester you can kind of go through with just a very quick fill out the form, and then instantly, bam, you get all this Category 1 CME credit from the Cleveland Clinic based on the information that you've read on our platform over the past year. And so we're really excited about that. I hope it's going to make continuing medical education much easier for doctors. And then the other new feature that we're working on, which I'm going to go into more detail at the conference, is our API. There's a growing digital health community, hundreds of new startups, and a lot of them we found are going through the same hurdles that we're going through in terms of verifying physician identity and dealing with a lot of very messy information. And it's, I think the more doctors that we can get moving onto these digital platforms that aren't necessarily electronic medical records, but are much more clever, novel, solving one particular problem, you know, with, say, an iPad app that lets you share CT scans and discuss them securely with a radiologist, things like that. Those are things that we're actually able to help through our API. And so that's kind of the next big wave that we've been working on over the summer and have some data to share at the conference about, which I think is going to be pretty exciting how we can turn Doximity into a platform.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that at the conference and to see you at the Connected Insights Summit. And I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to speak with us.
All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for your time as well, and I look forward to seeing you at the Connected Insights Conference.
Thanks. This is David Harlow at HealthBlog. I've been speaking with Nate Gross, co-founder of Doximity.